Good evening, everyone. It's Dr. Nigro again with our next episode of Psychology Unplugged. Another great, humbling week. I've had a really fun time interacting with a lot of you guys via text, email, through Psychology Today. A lot of you guys are really humbling. People have said they've decided to enter, get back into school in the fall and study psychology based on the podcast that Julie and I are doing. She's with me tonight. She always kind of circles the wagon and then pops in when she feels it's appropriate. So, again, very, very humbling, and I think I've gotten back to everybody. So this is just a really, really cool experience, as I say every week, but I want to recognize that, and there's true sincerity, because the last thing I have is an ego. I don't do well with people who have egos. So we just got back from visiting Julie's parents, who live out in Jabip from where we are in Duxbury, Massachusetts. Had a really great time, and we were listening. I think I mentioned this before. If you guys get a chance to listen to Wayne Dyer, D-Y-E-R, I think he's from Lexington, Massachusetts, and he's unfortunately passed away, but he was a clinical psychologist who did a phenomenal job of integrating spirituality, Chinese philosophy, psychology, science, into really helping us to understand the human condition. And so as we were driving back, as I said, you know, Julie's always like, what are you talking about this week? And I'm like, I don't know, it'll just kind of come to me. But there was this really great quote that I want to share with you guys. Again, he references a lot of the scholars, whether it's Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, St. Francis of Assisi. But a great quote was by Victor Hugo. The quote is, "There's nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come." And I think that's such an empowering statement in and of itself, because as humans and as individuals, we are capable of doing so much. We all have thoughts and ideas, ambitions, dreams, passions. We don't always follow them. I remember listening to another individual who said, asked the question, like, where's the wealthiest place in the world? And I was really surprised and taken back when he said the answer, but it makes a lot of sense. Cemeteries. All the dreams that weren't pursued. All the businesses that weren't started. All the books and movies that weren't written. All the songs that were never recorded. So this episode, if you've noticed, you've been following the program, I kind of go back and forth between the clinical and the scientific as a neuropsychologist, and more of the philosophical, cognitive behavioral, existential side. And the title of this episode is Mind Viruses. Okay, what's a mind virus? First of all, it's a metaphor. And the mind viruses, from my perspective, are really the amalgamation of terms, adjectives, words that have been spoken to us that have helped to shape our mindset, and in many ways, an irrational mindset that can really lead to the ontogenesis of a variety of psychiatric conditions. Let's say we'll stick with depression and anxiety. You hear from, I use the term with a lot of patients, the law of proximity. The closer someone is in relation to us, a spouse, a parent, a sibling, a significant other, what they say about us that may be derogatory or perceived as derogatory, negative, perceived as negative, critical, perceived as critical, that does a number on our personal psyche, because we, you know, the law of proximity basically means closeness. So the closer someone is in relationship to us, their words matter more to me. So if Julie said something negative to me, it would have a lot more meaning and it would resonate with me more than if a random person on the street said, "Hey, you're a jerk." You might be mad or upset temporarily in the moment. Oh, and by the way, Julie got pulled over on the way back from her parents, but that's only because she didn't. In, you know, Massachusetts, you have to have an inspection sticker, and she couldn't find her license or the registration. So she's got a bit of a wild side to her, even though she sounds docile when she gets on the microphone. But back to mind viruses, they fuel a lot of what I refer to as the affective disorders. Depression, anxiety, panic disorder, social phobia, social anxiety disorder. Again, I'm not really getting into the realm of like schizophrenia, Parkinson's, ADHD. Well, ADHD, yeah, I think that could probably relate to some extent, because if you hear something, and especially if you hear something multiple times, I'm sure you guys have heard of the self-fulfilling prophecy. Or if you hear it and it's delivered in a way by somebody who's proximal to us and whose opinion of us matters, that can really resonate with reconstituting and restructuring our sense of self. And our sense of self is incredibly fragile. So even the narcissist, I mean, talk about, if you want to talk about the most fragile ego, that's the narcissist. The histrionic is probably second. But mind viruses are, if you step back and you take a look at the things in your life that may be inhibiting you from pursuing a dream, a goal, a body image, a certain way to act in a relationship, anything that where you've kind of contemplated, like, this is what I want to do. I want to go to art school. I want to go to graduate school. I want to go to medical school. I want to be a dancer. I want to be a ballerina. You have every right to pursue that dream. But this is where the mind viruses can come in. You know what? I'm not sure I can really be a ballerina, because I remember my second grade teacher said, you know what? You're too clumsy. You know, you're never going to make it. They told Einstein he was an idiot. They told Dr. Seuss that he wasn't going to become anything. And he went on to transform a field of psychology, even though he wasn't a clinician, but he transformed the way we view ourselves. And he did it in an idyllic, characteristic way and cartoonish way. But, you know, every, you know, Julie loves like Christmas time. And, you know, with the Christmas music, and the kids are like, oh, they come over and like, oh, my God, the Christmas music. We watch Christmas Vacation, Elf, whatnot, and the Grinch Who Stole Christmas. But, you know, there were a lot of, they told Henry Ford that, you know, a gas-powered car, you know, it was ridiculous. So I think that, you know, when you look at the mind viruses, one, consider the source. And I've said this before, I think, in other episodes, maybe I haven't. Please consider the possibility, strong possibility, that independent of what relationship you have to another individual, that they may be wrong. And I don't do a lot of psychotherapy anymore, but I again the few patients that I do see really try to look at, okay, you believe this about yourself, where did it come from? And if you asked any of them, they would always say, what would Dr. Niagara say? What's the evidence? Well, my mom told me that I was never going to be a good athlete. Okay, that's an opinion. That's not a qualitative or quantitative fact. Psychiatric perseverance is, one, I think, a necessary component in overcoming psychological and symptomatology, because it's kind of a battle between the self And it's a battle between the perceived self by other people. And we get into the irrational beliefs of black and white thinking, catastrophizing, all or none thinking, dichotomous thinking, is a variety. You can look up Robert Leahy, who's a great clinical psychologist in cognitive behavioral therapy, and he identified 17 of the irrational beliefs. The original rational belief systems came from Albert Ellis in terms of what in his theory was, in his practice was, rationally motivated therapy. And I brought this up before. Go on YouTube, type in Albert Ellis, and you know, talk about confrontation. He was like in your face, and I think in my personal, you know, clinical practice, how I operate is kind of a healthy combination of rational motive therapy with cognitive behavioral therapy. But these viruses, and by virus, I think it's a strong term on purpose, because they really do infiltrate the psychological architecture of who we are. And it almost gets us to a point where we start to question, who's right? Am I right? Are they right? Or am I missing something that is completely out of my peripheral vision? I have no idea. But again, the episode where I talked about like questioning everything, this is a really important, if you're in therapy, this is a great tool or great intervention to talk to your therapist about, is explore, like, what have people spoken over you? And how much have you allowed what people have spoken over you to impact, enhance, or suppress what you are are willing to do, and what is your passion? I've said before, therapy takes place in between sessions. It does not take place during the session. That just gives you the roadmap. Think of therapy as pulling into the gas station and filling up your tank. In between the sessions, that's where you're driving and you're burning fuel. And that's the work you have to do until you get back to your next therapy session. People expect that, you know, you want to be cured during that initial session. You want Julie to give you the perfect medication, or your prescriber to give you that right medication, and it works right away. It does not work that way. We are too complex as people, but mind viruses, they haunt us, and they make us second guess ourselves. And again, we give back to the quote I've said ad nauseum on these episodes, becoming independent of the good opinions of other people. It sounds so simple, but yet it's so difficult to do. I mean, I've talked to patients. I said, okay, if we pulled out a piece of paper, let's all draw a line down the middle. Left side, good qualities. Right side, bad qualities. I think we have a fundamental tendency to generate that right side so much faster than the good side. You can get 50 compliments in a day. You get one person who says something negative. We negate the 50, and we focus on the 51st that's negative. And our egos are not ego in the sense of being egotistical, but our ego in the sense of being our sense of self or identity. We are very dependent on the reactions, and we are hypersensitivity to how others perceive us. And again, taking the narcissist and the histrionic out of the equation, if we're looking in the realm of depression and anxiety, and from as a diagnostician and neuropsychologist, I can tell you from experience, a lot of times I'll ask people, like, where did you, what, why is the essential question? What is, in my opinion, interesting? Why? That's where the answer lies. And a lot of patients really have a hard time articulating it, because I think it's become so automatic. As I've said, Freud was wrong. There is no such thing as the unconscious. Everything is conscious. Some things are more automatic than others. Some things are purposeful. Some things are more calculated. Some things are deliberate. Mm-hmm. But when, you know, it people kind of have not like a look of like shock or awe, but just like, I've never really thought about it that way. Like, yeah, why do I think that I'm ugly? You know, why do I think that I'm, you know, incapable of becoming something that I want to become. It wasn't on this version of Wayne Dyer, but I love this analogy that he uses. He says, you know, a woman, she's 45 years old, and she's talking to her psychiatrist, and she says, you know, I really want to get my bachelor's degree. He's like, okay, 4 years. So how old will you be in 4 years? He asked her. He says, well, 49. Okay. So you'd be 49 with a bachelor's degree. All right. If you don't get your bachelor's degree, 4 years goes by. How old are you going to be? She says, 49. And then she kind of realizes, like, wait a minute. I really do have control over my life. I really do have control over what I want to do. And it's being able to get to a point of disconnecting ourselves from the opinions of our spouses, of our teachers, of our parents, of our siblings, of our children, of our friends. Everybody's got an opinion. Nobody has an answer. I mean, I see it every day. I'm sure you guys see it every day as well. Everybody has an opinion. And you know what they say about opinions? I won't use that on the air, but you know the ending. So, you know, take a look and step back and, like, what are the mind viruses that are impeding you from pursuing aspects of your life that you would like to pursue, that you have suppressed, have given up on, have tabled, have shelved, have put into your closet, but there still may be a burning desire to, like, you know, I never want to live my life and have a mindset of, gee, I wish I would have. Gee, I wish I would have tried that. It's better to attempt something and fail because time is precious. Time is all we have. We have 24 hours in a day, and we don't get today back. We do not get an hour back. I started the podcast, 20 minutes ago? I don't get those 20 minutes back, but I find using I'm 17 minutes. I don't get that 17 minutes back, but I feel like the 17 minutes that I'm in the space right now, that I'm using it to be productive in helping someone. I wanted this episode to be more empowering, and it really comes from a lot of the conversations that I've had over this past week. And again, you guys seem so surprised when I do call you. They're like, oh my God, I'm not like Oz. I'm not like some mythical creature. I'm a humble person with a level of education, a family background that I was blessed to grow up with, a beautiful family with an amazing wife and great stepkids and their spouses and great friends. And I'm just doing this for the sole passion of just trying to educate people, because as a diagnostician, that everybody walks through my door is underdiagnosed, misdiagnosed, overdiagnosed, and it doesn't mean anybody's doing something wrong. But I see people coming in with these mind viruses that almost are infused into their personality, infused into how they navigate through the world. And a lot of these viruses not necessarily come from, yes, there's something called negative self-talk, but in my perspective as a professional, that negative self-talk is, that negative self-talk came from somewhere. You don't wake up one morning and just say, I'm an idiot. You don't wake up one morning and say, I'm stupid. You didn't wake up one morning and say you're fat. You got that. You heard that from somewhere. Whether you saw that, it was directly said to you by a person that you perceive to have some importance in your life, whether you're on social media and doing an excessive amount of social comparison, X causes Y. The Y are the mind viruses. The X's are what you need to figure out from a therapeutic perspective. Where did you get this belief that you are this? It doesn't. You're not just going to wake up one morning and just believe this. It has to come from somewhere. Fundamental law of cognitive behavioral psychology is X causes Y. So the Y are your mind viruses. The X's are is this really kind of the precursor, the etiology. They come from somewhere, and you know, beliefs that go unexplored are dangerous. Beliefs that go unchallenged are incredibly dangerous. And a lot of times, and I've worked with multiple patients, so why do you believe that? Well, just because. Okay, that's not an answer. Why do you believe it? Well, I don't know. Okay, not an answer. Why do you believe that you can't do this? And then, you know, I mentioned this process called like vertical descent, peeling the onion. You'll get to that place where it's like, well, I remember my mom telling me, you know, when she was passed out drunk on the couch that, you know, I was never going to mount anything. You could trace it back and you help. The process is called cognitive restructuring of challenging the irrational beliefs to eradicate the mind viruses, because they are paralyzing, they are crippling, they are debilitating, and they are inhibiting us from moving forward into aspects of our lives that we wish to pursue, independent of what other people think is right for us. How many moral guardians are out there? You know, I mean, how many people are right? Is everybody right? Am I right all the time? And, you know, not from a clinical perspective or a diagnostic perspective, but just in like a general life perspective.
No.
What?
No.
Oh, here she is, circling the wagon. Come on in, Julie. Oh, boy. Talking into the microphone. Oh, she's taking my chair now.
I've been sitting here listening to what Cora's talking about, and I guess what would maybe on this podcast, what I'm saying, is stop touching
the
microphone.
Get close to the microphone.
I guess what came up for me, and I have a lot to say, but I get so wound up and tangential that I wind up losing my point. I want to talk about, I do think that people do know very often where these mimetic, you know, the mimes, the mind viruses, they're called mimes, where they do come from. I think particularly those who struggle with psych issues, you know, they're more prone to be in touch with that. Some people just kind of brush them off and go through life and, you know, don't really recognize things that have happened to them. Some people take on a victim mentality and let it just kind of really be very cumbersome in their life and stop them from following their dreams and, you know, getting well and doing all the things that they want to accomplish. They can kind of become inert. Inertia is another thing I want to talk about. We all have it. I myself included.
Explain what inert means.
I think inertia is when you kind of, when you're your own worst enemy, and it's actual laziness. It's like procrastination. You get in your own way. You're kind of everyone knows what I'm talking about. You're like kind of the couch potato. I'll give you a perfect example. I like to be fit. Okay. I'm a fluctuator. I will be full on and I will get in great shape and then I'll stop. I can't tell you how many times I've looked at my Peloton and stared at it and then knew I had to get on it. And we all have done that. But I'm definitely a fluctuator. But what I really wanted to talk about, just a personal experience that I have, you know, grown up with is I was in, I think it was the fourth grade, and I had a teacher. So Cora was talking about it's the people that are closest to us. Well, yeah, but, you know, people bully people and they aren't necessarily close to us. So we can get injured, you know, on a playground. We can be told and start to believe that, you know, we are all these things these people say we are. And But what I wanted to say is, you know, it also depends on who it comes from. So if it comes from your peers and you're growing up, you think it's important because all of a sudden your peers become very important because you leave the nest, you know, so to speak, you go off to school. We all know this. When a teacher is abusive, it's very profound, I think, just as profound as a peer or parent. When I was in the fourth grade, I did not know, there was this teacher, I'm not going to name names, but he liked all the jocks and he didn't like the nerds, and I was a nerd.
Is that when he got beat up?
No. But thanks for bringing that up, by the way. So he actually put a long division problem. He knew I struggled in math. Okay, I did. I struggled in math, but I mostly struggled in math after this incident. And he put a long division problem on the board with the double digits, double or triple digits. It wasn't just like a single number long division problem. And he called me out in the middle of the whole class because I don't think he liked me because I was kind of a nerd and he just liked the jocks. And he said, you know, Julie, solve this problem. And I got up to go. I was terrified, mortified, because I knew I didn't know the answer and I knew I didn't know how to do long division. So I went to get up out of my seat and I started to walk up past my desk to go toward the chalkboard. And he said, no, sit down. And I went back to my desk. Again, I'm about to burst into tears and everyone is looking at me. And there were a lot of bullies in the class. So I didn't really have a lot to kind of no support. I didn't feel like I had a lot of support in that moment. And he said, solve it while you're sitting down. No pencil. Solve it in your head. And I was like, what? So, of course, I totally froze. I don't even remember how I responded. It was just like not the worst thing that's ever happened to me, but it affected me. And I remember him looking at me in front of the whole class. He said, what are you, stupid? Because I said, I can't. And he's like, what are you, stupid? And, you know, I'm not a victim, but that affected me for many, many years. I thought I was stupid. And it happened to me at school with a teacher around my peers. When I went home, my parents could only reassure me so much. I mean, this was what the outside world seemed to me, right? But it did affect me throughout my life. I mean, I've gotten stronger for it. I almost didn't go back to school because I had to take prob and stats. I had to take, you know, all chemistry, physics, and all kinds of, you know, math classes, of course, to get where I am. But I had to get over that. And it did take a lot of therapy. But that's just one example of, had I taken that personally for the rest of my life, it would have affected how I blossomed into my career, which has been a blessing. There are a lot of jerks out there, a lot of people who say nasty things. But, you know, I think if you just focus on the fact that, you know, even though we're born through our parents, we don't belong to them. You know, our kids don't even belong to us, really. When they're little, when they're growing up, they really need us. It seems that way. But then once they get older, they really don't belong to us anymore. And it's kind of like, you know, it's really a spiritual thing. And I think that once you can kind of wrap your mind around, when you come back to the passion that you feel, pay attention to those moments in your life when you feel passionate about something, because that's what you need to hang on to. And we can get mired in bad relationships and we can always put those things on the shelf. It happens to all of us. It's happened to me. So I know what it's like when you kind of like become dispassionate because you're so focused and your energy is going toward other things. Try, I guess, like I've said this before in the podcast, I use God as my instrument. I feel like I am an instrument of God's peace. I don't do anything really. I mean, I went to school, but I listen to that still small voice. I feel that it's an automatic connection, and it doesn't mean that I'm wearing a robe. You know what I mean? I'm not like a priestess or something.
She's got her shaman robes and she's walking
around. No, I don't.
Incense is burning in the house.
It keeps me grounded. It keeps me centered. It keeps it not about me. It keeps it not about like how successful I am. It has nothing to do with that. The success that I feel if at all, is when someone says, oh my God, like, thank you, or yeah, we really got that right. And the people, if you tap into your passion and you kind of challenge those voices, these automatic voices. So pay attention to these viruses. They are mind viruses. They're memes. These are automatic thoughts. These are things that just have kind of got attached to us in our brain, and they don't belong. Declutter. And it's a big challenge because I still do it to this day. I have automatic thoughts in my brain, and sometimes I get into a mood and I go to a place and I'm like, oh my God, like, no, think about where you come from. You come from an amazing source that is full of love. And that is what you need to remember. You are a good person. If you hurt somebody, say you're sorry and mean it. Move on. Move on. Forgive people. I know that's a tough one. We'll deal with that at another time. Sometimes it's very hard to forgive and let go. But as soon as you can kind of do that and not carry that heavy bag on your, and with all of the adjectives and all of the messages that we've received, the negative ones tend to stick more. They just do. And those are the ones that are going to hold us back. But there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. Don't give up. We'll address this again, but this is really kind of tied into cognitive behavioral therapy, changing the way you look at things. The things you look at will change. And that's really what that's all about.
Versus dialectical behavioral therapy.
You just leave? So use the analogy of the jellyfish. The jellyfish stings you. To get rid of the mind viruses, pour the ammonia on it. Or urinate on yourself, both of which will kill the sting. Take control of your lives. And again, this podcast is one about education. With Julie and I, it's about sharing our collective knowledge, our collective experience. But the mind viruses are, they inhibit us. They're doors. But can I leave you with this example? Hold on. It's like being in a prison. But the shadows are bars. They're not there. We've allowed other people to convince us to believe that they are ironclad. What do you want to say?
A lot of people have been calling and emailing, but it's hearing the voices of these wonderful people that are just so, they're relieved. The sense of relief that is just so touching. People who are calling saying, I don't know what's wrong with me. I thought I was all alone. I thought nobody got it. And it's really, this is reaching a lot of people. So if you're out there and you think that there's something wrong with you, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just everybody's got issues. Everybody's got their stuff. And we're here to the best of our ability to help. If there are topics that you feel are super important that we're not touching on, because it's endless, you know, it's an endless labyrinth of material, please ask us. I know that we haven't really discussed bipolarity. I think we need to do that. But I think we need to talk more about it. But there are so many things that, you know, we skim the surface. This is kind of like a vibey, touchy-feely one today. It's not really very clinical, but it's just as important. So I just wanted to say that there's nothing wrong with you, okay? You're not going crazy. Just we'll try to do what we can to help you resource-wise.
So are you circling around again, or is that it? So, as I've said ad nauseum in multiple episodes, please, if you are struggling with any kind of psychiatric condition, if a loved one, if a friend, have them get a full neuropsychological evaluation. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of you guys. Again, very humbled that you guys are driving in, flying in from all over the place. I never expected this podcast to reach an audience that we have, and the feedback, and we've had late night discussions with people and with families about a variety of disorders. That's why we do this. I'm passionate about it. I hope that comes through in my dialogue, in Julie's dialogue. But the only way to figure out and really know what you need to work on is through a full neuropsych eval. And this goes back to the quote I've ended a lot of episodes with, Abraham Maslow: learn to become independent of the good opinions of other people. Look at your dreams, look at your passions, look at the things that you have suppressed, and follow them. And if people have told you no, you know what? Screw it. Follow it. Because you don't want to wake up one day and say, like the death of Ivan Illovich. If you read the story, the whole point at the end, he says, what if my whole life was wrong and a mistake? You don't want to get to that point. As Julie said, don't die with the music still in you. So again, more of an existential episode, but one that I thought was really relevant because we are all about empowerment and hope and treatment and cure. And psychiatric disorders are, for a vast majority, are curable. For a vast majority or of a specific segment, they are manageable. There is hope. There, you have to believe there is hope that you can overcome anything. But it takes work. It takes time. It may take medication. It may take therapy. It may take the combination of the two. But we are all resilient people. And stop giving other people the power over your self-esteem. Stop letting people infiltrate you with mind viruses, because nobody can infiltrate a mind virus without your permission. Use your voice. Be strong. Until next week, reach out to me, as you guys have done, through Psychology Today, psychologyunplugged at outlook.com, my personal cell phone, and I welcome texts, I welcome phone calls, I will talk to any of you guys, 617-750-9411, Eastern Standard Time in the United States. Be well, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, question everything, follow your passions. Bye, guys. That was a good one.